You're listening to Leaf Filter Radio, and the guru of gutter protection himself, Chris Counihan, is here to take your most pressing leaf-related questions.
Hey, everybody, Chris here. I understand we have Ron on the line. Ron, where are you calling from?
Uh-oh. Ron, are you calling from a ladder?
Well, I was. I wanted to ask Chris what I need to do to get my gutters ready to have leaf filter installed.
Oh, Ron, you don't have to do anything. A leaf filter trusted pro will come out and clean out your gutters, realign and seal your gutters, and install leaf filter, America's number one gutter protection system.
So I didn't need to get on this ladder?
Ron, leaf filter trusted pros are in your neighborhood and ready to help. Just visit leaffilter.com/day to schedule your free gutter inspection and get up to 30% off.
Thank goodness. What was that site?
That's leaffilter.com/day for your free gutter inspection today. See representative for warranty details. Promotion is 20% off plus a 10% senior or military discount. One discount per household.
Number 5, initial reaction. This is J.R. Radcliffe from Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers, joined by...
J.P. Cadoran from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel. What's up, man?
Not much. How's it going with you? It's been a while.
Life is good. It hasn't been a while. It's been a week.
Yes.
But happy June.
Happy June to you as well. The weather. Nice. The weather's been so good, man. So good lately.
Nice. All right, let's get into it. I don't want to waste people's time. The Major League Baseball draft is this Thursday.
That's
normally
true.
Not a big deal, but I got to say, in my 6 years of working at Time Warner, it always has been one of the coolest events, and here's why. I was thinking about it the other day. It has the exact amount of hype that it deserves, which is really not much. And I say that because the MLB draft, first of all, there are 40 rounds for some ungodly known reason. There are
right.
40 rounds of the MLB draft.
You need a lot of baseball players for the minor leagues.
And I think that it's just, I think people get the balance of immediate impact versus long-term potential. And I just really, really like that. And I feel like it gets the exact amount of hype it deserves.
That's interesting. Could you say that about anything else that it gets, any other major event that it gets too much or too, it gets the proportional amount of hype that it deserves?
No, especially not any other draft.
Right.
I mean, my goodness, the NFL and NBA, not even close.
And do you think, maybe it's because they're missing a little bit of a marketing opportunity. They've really ramped up the MLB draft in the last
decade.
It used to be over the phone. I mean, you could get an audio feed of it, but... with it on the MLB Network and everything, whereas the NFL draft, they practically have a red carpet premiere and all that.
And the other cool part is that there's always a lot of local kids drafted.
Yeah,
I mean,
I
Racine and Kenosha specifically always have somebody drafted. UWM last year had, I think, 3 players drafted out of them.
Right.
Local kids, too. A lot of people do.
Yeah, UWM's got Ryan Solberg from Waukesha West. I'm sure he'll be in the conversation a little bit. Zach Henderson, high school player for Greendale right now, outfielder. Another outfielder from Iguanago, Noah Sadler. All those guys are going to be at least in the conversation. The thing about it, though, is the draft is so – if a scout has seen you and assessed that you're a major league prospect, then you're going to get drafted. It's not like there's national coverage dedicated to these kids. You really don't. I mean, the number one overall pick is going to be somebody the majority of people haven't heard of before. So it really, like what you're saying about the proportional hype, you're not going to get that. People aren't telling us who the top 5 kids are. Here's their breakdown and everything. They're just sort of under the radar.
It's cool because, again, it's a 2 or 3 year out process. So, yeah, you're not going to hear a lot. You know who will get drafted, though?
Who?
Diamond Stone.
Not in the MLB draft. Unless
you never
somebody
know.
Is really
He's,
thinking long term.
He could have some potential.
He could.
What could he play? First base?
I think so.
I bet with as strong as he is, he's probably got a heck of a swing, too.
He might, yeah. Well, even if he doesn't have a heck of a swing, I mean, he's big enough
there.
Where all he has to do is make contact, right? So Diamond Stone is the basketball center for Dominican High School, part of 3 consecutive state championships, going into his senior year, very heavily discussed recruiting situation as highly regarded a recruit I think as the state has seen. I don't know since
I mean
when,
Kevon
Ryan
Looney
Lynch.
Looney is 1 year ago and is the best comparison as far as recruiting hype. I mean, he just got to pick whatever school he went to. He was choosing between Duke, Wisconsin, Florida, everywhere.
Right.
And he ended up picking UCLA, but Diamond again is going to get to pick wherever he wants to go, which is why you think it's interesting what came out a week or two ago.
Yeah, and I missed this initially, but there's a player in Mississippi by the name of Malik Newman who is with Diamond Stone. They've sort of said, They've said very clearly they are a package deal. Whoever wants to recruit these guys, they're going to get them together. And Newman is a guard. I think he's 6'3 or 6'2. Stone is a big man, 6'10. And so they're kind of an unusual pairing because obviously he's in Wisconsin and Malik Newman is in Mississippi, but they know each other and they're friends. And obviously with the traveling circuits that are available to big-time basketball players, these guys meet each other and know each other very well. Similar to what we saw from Duke this past year with Jahlil Okafor, and I think Tyus Jones is the name of the other guy, they did the same thing. They were a package deal. It was kind of novel at the time. Well, now it seems like... Now it seems like this is going to be a thing, and like I said, with the way these guys travel around the country to play, I have to think this is going to happen a lot. You can boost your own sort of profile by making it a more attractive option for a college team.
And here's the reason that we care, because Diamond's going to get to go wherever he wants. I mean, right. We've known that for a while. But now that he's a package deal, what that means for us is that we're probably not going to get to see him in state.
Right.
Wisconsin and Marquette are not necessarily a package deal type of place.
Right.
So this means that Diamond Stone will likely not be continuing his career here in the state of Wisconsin, which is a shame because, I mean, I remember I went up and talked to him before his first varsity basketball game.
Really?
I was up there at Dominican.
Really?
Yeah, and just you were so impressed with this kid because he was 14 years old, but he was 6'10", and he could handle, and he could shoot, and he can obviously dunk. And to think that, you know, once his 4 years here are up, he's going to be gone, it's kind of a crazy thought.
Yeah, I know. It goes quickly, and you're right about that, though. This seems like something that would be attractive to only a big-time program, and usually with Marquette and Wisconsin, you can sell the hometown factor to a degree. You're going to stay close to home.
Especially people with Dwayne Wilson at Marquette.
Yeah, I know, or Deontay Burton for that matter.
Yeah.
People know who you are already, and Marquette has had success recently in the local market, as you just mentioned. But, yeah, this definitely looks like they're making a play for the UCLA's, Duke's, Kentucky's, Kansas's of the world, and who knows where it isn't a done deal from simple logistics standpoint. I mean, maybe no school offers both of them at the same time. I don't know why a school wouldn't do that because they're both very highly regarded. They're both top 10 kids in the nation, but it's just an interesting thing. I'm interested to know if it becomes a trend because are you going to see kids that are insisting on doing this and taking, I guess, greater control of the recruiting process?
Yeah, it almost happened here with Brady Ellingson from Sussex Hamilton and Riley LeChance from Brookfield Central because I can't remember who did it first. I think Brady committed to Iowa first while Riley still was choosing.
Right.
I know they both – I mean, so Brady committed to Iowa and Riley still had an offer there and it was in his final choices – ended up coming to Vanderbilt. So it almost happened. I guess that would be a much smaller scale.
Right.
But still, you can see that because of the AAU teams. You know, they also had Reed Timmer on their team, I believe, from New Berlin. So, you know, that could have all worked out if they wanted to.
Right. I think the difference is those guys would have simply chosen to go to the same school. I remember talking to Brady for a story, I think on a Monday night, after he had committed to Iowa, saying, oh, man, I hope Riley chooses Iowa, too. And I think within 48 hours, he had chosen Vanderbilt. So they were just thinking about going to the same school, whereas these guys are saying, it doesn't matter where we go. We're going together.
Yeah.
And if you want one of us, you're gonna have to take both of us. What else do we have today? We got a little Packers, don't we, JP?
Packers, high school,
yeah,
combination.
So an interesting thing happened a little earlier, I would say, in the spring. The Green Bay Packers announced their exhibition schedule, as they do every year. And one of the games, the first game, in fact, of the exhibition season, happens to fall on a Friday night right in the wheelhouse of the prep football season in Wisconsin. It's a home game at Lambeau Field. And the high school football home opener, or I shouldn't say home opener, but opening week, is that night. In the past, under Bob Harlan, when he was running the Packers, he would actually make it a point to leave that date open for high school teams to not conflict with Friday nights in general. And so there was actually a case where one exhibition game was played at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that left the window open for teams in the evening to play their games. So it was interesting because a big-time franchise would make that concession for the high school game, which by comparison in terms of dollars and exposure, of course, we understand is a much smaller scale. Now, the Packers, for the last couple of years, they did this last year and again this year where they are conflicting pretty much directly. There's a guy, John Casper. He's from the Milwaukee area. He covers prep sports for the La Crosse Tribune. He wrote a column last year saying that the Packers should leave Friday nights to the high school teams and made some interesting points in his column. And I reached out to him and we chatted a little bit to talk about sort of his perception of the whole thing and what he thinks the Packers should do.
Okay, so last year you wrote this article that titled Packers Should Leave Friday Nights to the High Schools, and I guess from your perspective, how is the current administration for the Green Bay Packers different on this issue than how it was with Bob Harlan? It sounds like Bob Harlan was totally receptive to the idea of really giving high schools, basically giving Friday nights to them, no matter what.
Yeah, I think it was in 2006 that the Packers ran into a scenario where they had a preseason game against the Tennessee Titans scheduled for Friday of Labor Day weekend, which I think that year would have been week two of the high school season. And Bob Harlan did everything he could to move the game to Thursday, but at that time NFL rules prevented the Tennessee Titans from playing two games. I believe it was in a four-day window. I think they had the Monday night game or something like that week. So the NFL wouldn't allow it. So Bob Harlan, who, you know, just really recognized how important, you know, the history of Friday nights was to the high schools, he decided to move that game to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, which was a pretty big step. I mean, we aren't talking, you know, 20, 30 years ago. This is 8 years ago when the NFL was still a pretty big deal. And so, yeah, so you had, and granted it was on Labor Day weekend, so maybe, you know, people could take off a little bit early, but you had 60, 70, whatever the capacity was at Lambeau that year, descending on Green Bay for, you know, basically an afternoon game on a weekday, just because Bob Harlan felt, you know, that Friday night is reserved for high school football. I think he felt that the Green Bay Packers were a different organization, that they should do whatever they can to kind of protect that and not try to compete with the high schools. Cause I think it's unfortunate that the current leadership not only doesn't think that way, but I don't think that they're doing anything, you know, in their power to even avoid playing on Friday nights, whether it's telling the NFL not to schedule them on Friday nights or seeing if they can move the game entirely. And it's just kind of disappointing that an organization that likes to trumpet that, you know, we're a program that's owned by the community seems to really kind of do the community a disservice by continuing to play preseason games on Friday nights and go up against high school football.
And I'm kind of curious why that would be. I'm not smart enough to know how dollars would get involved with preseason games and depending, you know, why it matters when they're Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But, I mean, do you think it's purely driven by money, or do you think the current ownership administrative group, I should say, they just don't really care about what's going on in the high school level?
I think it's driven a little bit by money. I also think that the current ownership is a little, I don't know if out of touch is the right word, but I don't think that they realize the impact that even preseason games have on some of these communities. And I know that people are still going to go to these high school games. You know, you're still going to get decent sized crowds, but it's not going to be, I think, the level that it was at if the Packers weren't playing that night. And I'm not sure that Mark Murphy really understands the impact that his team has in this state. It's not just a sporting game, you know, it's an event. You know, people plan family outings around Packers games, you know, bars shut down or bars, you know, not shut down, but, you know, have, you know, specials and, you know, they bring in extra workers and I just don't think that he realizes how he alters people's lives by continuing to play. And even though it is only one game a year, that some of these high schools only have four home games. And, you know, if they have one of these games where the attendance is kind of so-so, well, that's kind of rotten for those kids that work so hard to be able to play in front of their friends and family.
Yeah, and you brought up some good points in that column last year, talking about things beyond purely just attendance. You talked about like column inches in newspapers. Now, obviously, we live in a web age where it doesn't really matter if you can get whatever news you want to get. But some of these small town newspapers, the newspaper is still actually a thing for getting that information out to people. What are maybe some other things too that really would be an impact besides just gate attendance at these games?
Well, yeah, I mean that is definitely one, and you know I think a lot of these radio stations, I know. In Milwaukee, it's not such a big thing to have a radio station carry a game. I know there's a few that do it, but you know, you go to all these little towns and the local radio station is broadcasting that Friday night game. Well, if they also have a contract to broadcast the Packers, that puts them in a real tough decision. Do they lose the revenue that comes with, you know, selling sponsorships for those Packers broadcasts, or do they lose the revenue that comes with selling sponsorships for those high school broadcasts? From a newspaper standpoint, yeah, I mean, yeah, we do have the web to put things on, but I mean, there still is, you know, nothing like, you know, waking up on Saturday morning and reading all the great coverage from Friday night the night before. At least I like to think that, and I might be a little biased in that manner. But and another thing that, you know, I didn't think about until, you know, today was, I remember when I was in Eau Claire, we had season credentials for the Packers. And at that time, the Packers PR department made it pretty clear that we had to attend not only every regular season game, but every preseason game. And we had to attend at least two or three training camp practices if we wanted to keep our credentials. And that meant if we wanted to keep our credentials for postseason, you know, if we wanted to maybe go to the Super Bowl, you know, if we wanted to keep those, we had to go to those games. So that put some of these newspapers, and now there's not as many as there are in the past that staff a lot of these home games, that puts them in a bind. You know, do they send one of their staffers to Green Bay to cover a meaningless game, you know, when there's meaningful high school football being played? TV is another thing. You know, TV coverage of high school football, especially in the Milwaukee area, is gotten more and more limited every year. I'm always kind of amazed whenever I go home and see my parents, and if I'm there on a Friday night or whatever, I'll check out the local coverage. And I remember I was there one year for a state football weekend, and one of the local stations devoted more time to Tom Crean spitting out his gum and then putting it back in his mouth than they did to coverage of the state high school football game. So, I mean, that's going to be even lessened. I mean, there will be some stations that still devote their normal time. But, again, you know, you're taking away coverage from these kids and giving it to a team that, you know, obviously doesn't need it. You know, the Packers are going to be there for years to come, regardless if they play this game or not. So that goes beyond, you know, attendance at these high school games. And, you know, we could get into other things too, like the people in Green Bay who have to work at the stadium and they have kids that play football, the traffic that it creates for high schools that are around the stadium. I know last year when this happened, there were some high schools that moved games to Thursday based on traffic alone. You know, it had nothing to do with the fact that they were worried about losing fans in the stands because of the conflict. So there are a lot of different things that I don't think people really understand when they say, well, you know, the high schools, maybe they'll lose a few people, but they'll still be fine. You know, I really don't think that is necessarily the case.
Now, what is fandom like in the La Crosse area? Because you're obviously very close to Minnesota. Is it pretty much split 50-50 Packers-Vikings? Is it predominantly Packers? How would you sort of describe it?
You know, living in both Eau Claire and now in La Crosse, I'd say it's pro Packers. I'd say it's probably maybe 75-25. Maybe when the Vikings are good, you start seeing, you know, Vikings fans pop up that you didn't know were football fans. That was big in Eau Claire when they had Brett Favre for that one year. Everybody was a Vikings fan all of a sudden. But you know, I think it's more predominantly Packers. And again, you know, Packers fandom, it's like beyond just cheering for a team. I think it's one thing that people realize brings, you know, their family together. And, you know, with these families doing so many different things these days and involved in so many different, you know, activities, this is one thing that brings everybody together at the same time. And, you know, there's not very many other things that have the ability to do that anymore.
Now, lacrosse also coming up here on the postseason, the throes of the WIAA postseason. Lacrosse hosts one of the cooler events of the spring season. That's the track and field tournament, the track and field meet, a two-day meet each year. It seems to be the kind of the one event that's sort of outside that bubble on the eastern part of the state. The Milwaukee, Madison, Green Bay, Fox Cities area gets to host pretty much the rest of it. That has to be cool for the kids out west, because they got to travel a long way to get to any state tournament except for the track and field meet. I guess the cross country meet's also in Wisconsin Rapids. But what is that event like for people in the La Crosse area? I have to think it's received very well.
Well, I know it's a huge source of pride for the whole area, and not just La Crosse, but for the communities around it. It happens to be my favorite state event. Just from a, you know, kind of a purely newspaper writer standpoint, there's so many good stories to tell. You know, you could have a team go to, you know, state baseball or something and lose in the first game, and then there's really not much to say, but you know, you have this, you have so many different athletes and they're all so determined. And beyond that, you know, it's just a way for the area to show itself off. You know, I don't think, you know, I grew up in Dousman on the east side of the state, just south of Oconomowoc, and I never knew how beautiful this area was, first of all. So you go to the state track meet, you know, you sit in the stands and then you look at the bluffs, and that's such a great background for the state track meet. And, you know, for these kids, yeah, it is nice not to, you know, have to pile into a van and drive for 2.5-3 hours, get into a hotel, you know, wake up, you know, sleep in a strange bed, and you know, have to drive back after you're done. It is nice to have people, you know, come to your neck of the woods. I know it's great for the university. I know they really like it a lot. And the stadium at UWL was renovated recently. And if it wasn't for the state track meet, I don't think that those renovations ever would have happened, at least in the scope that they happened. And I know that when Oshkosh made a push to host the state track meet a few years ago, lacrosse, you know, really fought to keep it there, because it does mean a lot for a big number of reasons, both for athletes and, you know, just for people in the area.
All right, so a couple points from what John was saying. I happen to think it's not really worth the trouble to be too concerned with what the Green Bay Packers are doing with high school sports. I don't think the audiences are the same. Like he said, the parents are still going to go to the games. I think if you want to read about the high school sports team, there's still going to be stories online. But he did make some good points about things like TV or radio in these communities outside of Milwaukee, where radio does play a big role with prep sports, not being able to air games because
that's a business decision at that point.
Right, I know. And that's where the dollars come in. It kind of trickles down. It might not matter to the Packers when they schedule their exhibition games, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And I don't know what goes into making those game schedules. It certainly seems like they're negotiable, since with Harlan there was never a problem. And now, of course, with Murphy, they've managed to schedule a few Fridays in a row, seasons in a row. I still don't see that there's a huge issue, but it's interesting. I mean, when you look at the Green Bay Packers, they sort of look at themselves anyway as the gold standard, from a tradition standpoint in the NFL, and sort of from a community goodwill standpoint because of their strange ownership situation or unique ownership situation. Would you hold the Packers to a higher standard? Would you expect them to move aside for high school games?
No, and I hate to say this, but like, Wisconsin doesn't have that great of a high school football culture either. I mean, I know it's definitely bigger in some parts of the state than others. I mean, for instance, I get to work in the Fox Valley with my job, and a lot of those guys are more passionate about coverage of high school football than down here. But I don't know. I mean, if it was someplace like Texas, then I get it. But for something where, yeah, the parents are going to go to the games anyway, you might be able to see certain games on time or a cable sports channel on Friday nights,
right,
and DVR those games,
right,
and watch them the rest of the week too. I just don't see that it's that big of a deal. So I'm with you. I just don't think it's worth it. Now, I don't think it should have happened in the first place. I mean, I think the Packers should be able to say, NFL, don't schedule a game on Friday nights in the preseason. It's as simple as that. But if it does get scheduled, I don't think it's worth the effort to go ahead and change it.
It does seem a little sort of we don't care about you if they have the option to schedule a game on a Saturday or Friday afternoon. It does seem like they really don't care about the high school scene. And that is too bad, because they are sort of the community team, the Green Bay Packers.
And not to mention, the other thing is, like, I know I'm not the intended audience here, because it's a Packers preseason game.
Right.
Who cares what's going on in a Packers preseason game?
But John makes that point that people do care all over the state of Wisconsin.
That's
that
awful.
It's weird. It's not something I understand, but he's right. People do care about the exhibition season, especially the first one of the year. People can't wait to see their Packers.
I can wait. I can wait a long time. The first week of high school football is more important to me. I do not care about... And not to mention, what happens in the first preseason game anyway? You see about one series with Rodgers, and then the rest is completely full of guys that won't even make the roster.
Yes.
If for people who want to go to that game, just call me. I'll give you a one-minute recap of what happened, because that's all you need to know.
I thought it was interesting him talking a little bit about the fandom of that part of the state. Again, I feel like we don't have the same perspective being in Milwaukee, where things are different from other parts of the state, talking about sort of the Packers fandom out there versus what Vikings fandom would be. And he talks a little bit about the state track and field meet, which is going on here in a couple days. And really, I know we kind of talked about this a couple podcasts ago. One of the best events of the year.
For
so
sure.
much fun to cover. Now, you've been out there. You've been out
For
there
sure.
once,
I've been
right?
out there. Yep.
Yeah, and it's just tons of athletes from all over the state. It's neat that it's in a different setting. We usually see state tournament events in Milwaukee and Madison and the mm-hmm. Fox Valley, with the exception of gymnastics and cross country, which are out in Wisconsin Rapids.
Yeah, beautiful.
Baseball used to be in Stevens Point in the summer, is not anymore, is now in the Milwaukee area. So then it's those two and out in lacrosse for track and field. It's a tremendous venue and just a really cool experience to see state title winner after state title winner yep. after state title winner. Only wrestling really gives that to you.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. That's yeah. my event. That's one that I love.
Yeah, I like that one too. It's cool to just have the volume of state champions to know the work that they put in and the talent level they have all in one place.
Cool. So what can people read from you these days? You'll be at State Track,
yeah,
right?
I will be up at State Track, out at State Track, covering the multitude of Lake Country teams that are going to be there. And we'll still keep you updated. State baseball is right around the corner. We've got a couple irons in the fire on that one, and hopefully I'll be making a trip to Appleton as well.
Cool. I got some Lake Country Lutheran baseball footage, a story that you've written about as
yes,
well, right?
That's true,
those guys
yeah.
are incredible.
They
so
are good.
That is on the show this week, as well as the Whitefish Bay girls soccer team. So
all right.
Lots of good stuff as always between J.R. Radcliffe from Now Newspapers and Lake Country Publications, myself, J.P. Cadoran. Time Warner Cable Sports Channel.
And we should also mention our engineer, Michael Meidenbauer here.
Who?
Michael Meidenbauer.
Ah.
Former Kettle Moraine baseball player on the state runner-up team, I believe, in 2008. That's
and all-around stud, I think, is the
He's
first
an
line
all-around
on his resume.
Stud. It's true. Hey, thanks for listening once again to our initial reaction podcast. We'll catch you soon.
See ya.